Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 86, and this week's guest is Maurice Fitzpatrick. And Maurice comes to talk with us about pinholes and his cigar box pinholes and his Diana pinholes, and we talk to him a lot about pinholes. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show number 86. The Rona Chronicles, is that what we're calling these now? Hey Andrew.
What are you on about now?
The Corona Chronicles.
Oh, Corona Chronicles.
Sorry,
I misheard you there. Yeah. Corona Chronicles. Right. Yeah, well, it's affecting our lives, isn't it? I can't get away in the caravan, you know?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Julie and I are going to have date nights on the drive in our caravan because we can't get away. So no. We'll take a bottle of red wine out there, make some Chinese food, take it out. Just pretend
hang out we're in the caravan. Away.
Yeah. So it's all, the world's falling apart and it's all Donald Trump's fault.
Yep. And pinhole photography's fault.
And Boris Johnson's fault. Damn those people.
Yep.
So what you been up to then in these times of pest? Are you still able to work? Is there any?
We are. Luckily, we are kind of, my wife is able to completely work from home. So she's homeward bound now. She's here. And we're pretty rural. So where I work, I'm basically socially distanced, even in my normal day, you know. I go to work and I don't see anyone. I don't speak to anyone because I'm, you know, doing cabinets or interior trim.
I thought you were working in small teams, though, weren't you? Were working with others doing that stuff, or were you always by yourself?
Well, I pretty much, I mean, I work with one other guy, my boss, Chris. So it's just us two, and he doesn't do anything but hang out in his wood shop and build cabinets and, you know, we go to work, you know, so... I have the ability, I'm going to continue to work until they say you're going to get tickets if you come out, you know, until it's like you have to stay home. So I'm going to work until it gets to that stage, I think. I just have a bottle of hand sanitizer I keep in my hand, and I, from time to time I just, you know,
I think it's
my hands.
It's most important to just keep away from people. So I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah,
I'm perfectly
that's kind of
keeping away from people because that's... because I'm miserable. But you
make me miserable, Andrew.
I love you too. You drag me out of the dark room. This happens every springtime when the clocks change. We get out of step with each other because you dragged me out of the dark room about 20 minutes ago when I was still thought I had an hour to spare. I've been making postcards to spread the love in these dark days.
I saw some of those. I like the one of that you printed in a landscape orientation of a girl at like a shop.
Yeah,
that was
a photo walk in London back end of last year with London Camera Project and Lomography. And it was pissing down with rain all day long. But I had the Nikon F2 with HP5 rated at 1600.
Cool.
And this couple were nice canoodling. You're familiar with that word, canoodling? You know. Under a brolly,
yes,
by that sign that says Morning Glory. It was a coffee shop, I think. And you could get, I got right up to them because they were oblivious to my stalking and taking pictures. But what better way of cheering people up than to send postcards with a little message from me in? So watch out.
I have a box of those. I wish I had a little bit better area to do it because I would do the same thing too.
It's great.
Yeah. So, who do we have this week?
We have, I'm very pleased to finally be able to nail down Maurice Fitzpatrick, or if you're in America, Maurice Fitzpatrick.
Maurice.
But I refuse to call you Maurice Morris.
Well, good morning, gentlemen.
We'll just call you Fitzpatrick.
Pleasure to meet you both for the first time.
Yeah, it's great to have
Thanks
you.
For coming.
An admirer of your pinhole work since you joined the podcast group a couple of years ago, maybe now, I don't know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And more recently, I was tempted to reach out to you. I was prompted to reach out to you because of the awesome cigar box pinhole shots you were doing. Oh. And we've exchanged a couple of messages, I think, about those, so we can talk about those. But why don't you, in the time-honored fashion that is this podcast and many others, tell us a little bit about how you got into pinhole photography or photography generally, and your story, Maurice.
Sure. Well, I've always had a strong interest in fine art and creativity, and I started out really wanting to be a painter. And all good paintings are planned, so I started taking photographs for that purpose, to plan my paintings. And in short order, I just decided that, I like these photographs better than the effort that went into making the paintings, and I just kind of continued along that path of photography. So that was back in 35 millimeter film time. And as digital came along, I migrated to digital like everybody else. And that gave myself and everybody the advantage of shooting a lot more because you weren't paying for the images. But it really left me very unsatisfied, and I just felt it was very sterile. And the photos, to me, looked very ordinary. And so when Facebook came into being, I began to follow other photographers, just so that I could study what they were doing and try to learn from, their technique and what was interesting to me. And I followed people like David Carroll or Ashley Leonard Stoll. They now run Peanut Press. They publish a lot of photography books. Orville Robertson, who was a street photographer. My friend Andrew Steiner out in Chicago. People like that, just to try to learn what they were doing and what made their images intriguing to myself. And through David Carroll, I learned about Kevin Parent. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin's work, but he's also on Facebook.
Yeah,
he was doing some. He does pinhole. He was also doing what's the other one? The membrane. I haven't done it. I forget. I'm blanking on the zone plate. He was doing zone plate work. Yeah. Really very intriguing work. So I reached out to him and just asked him a little bit about what he was doing. And then I also saw work by this Astro Beck, Beck mm-hmm. Romatowski, who you've had on, Diane mm-hmm. Peterson, Jeff McConnell, and Zeb Andrews is another person who really, Zeb works at Blue Moon Camera out in, I think it's in Portland. But mm-hmm. he posted some really fabulous work. So that just kind of took me down this rabbit hole that is pinhole photography, because I just decided, all right, I'm going to these images had a look to them that were very, an aesthetic that was very different than these very sterile looking digital photographs. And that's a look that I wanted. I was, trying to figure out how to create that. I want to see the edge of the film or the sprocket holes, things like that. I didn't know anything about pinhole photography at the time, and a lot of people said just build your own camera with a tin can, that sort of thing. But I decided to buy a camera just to understand how it worked, and I could see how it was constructed and, what were the considerations. So I bought a zero image multi-format, which I got through Blue Moon Camera. That was back in 2012. And it's so simple, but so elegant. And from that allowed me to then go on to build my own cameras, and once I understood the principles and how it behaved, so that's what brought me here.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, well, Zeb.
He's been on the show, but I think it was one of those episodes where Curry was off hiking somewhere.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, Zeb was broadcasting live from out on the street somewhere,
and we had, oh, is that right?
That was a show with the helicopter and the drunk people.
Helicopter, yeah.
That must have made for some interesting sound quality.
Yeah, it worked okay.
Luckily, we here at the Lizards Podcast already have such a high sound quality. We strive for the highest technical possible results. So
it's not too bad. I hate to say it, but the curse of the anchor hasn't affected us for a while, has it?
You had to do it.
So these days, Maurice, shooting more with homemade pinhole cameras or with the Zero still?
Well, I always carry the Zero with me wherever I go. But I've built about a dozen of my own cameras over the last maybe 3-4 years. And then I also have some toy cameras, which are always with me, just because they're so unique in their, you know, the images they produce and the qualities. So I have a Diana F Plus, which has the pinhole feature on it. So it's the F-150 is the pinhole. Otherwise, it's F-11, F-16. I have a Holga 120 wide, which is like F-135. So that's so light and versatile and wide, which I also like. I have other. Go ahead.
Do you use that with the 6x12 or the 6x9?
I do 6x12 on that. Gotcha. You know, again, that's more of a recent acquisition, so I've only used it on a few trips, and I do like mm-hmm. it. It is a little quirky, like most things plastic. So I'm still figuring that out.
And plastic.
Yeah,
and loose.
Yeah. I did have the back fall off once, which destroyed two frames, nice. Which was not nice. So now I just put rubber bands around it to hold it together. Mm-hmm. But mostly I build cameras. Yep. And if you've never built a camera, people listening, build a camera, because that's the best way to learn. You'll learn how the different parameters affect your image appearance. And it can be quite satisfying.
What was the first pinhole camera you...
And quite disappointing.
It can be, yeah. But you learn from that. So your next one will be better.
What was the first pinhole camera you made after taking inspiration from the Zero?
Well, I did build a curved plane panoramic, which was very complicated. Again, made out of a cigar box. And the most difficult thing was creating the film transport mechanism that was light tight. And I had to tape, you know, all the seams of the box, because it was, you know, my first camera. I didn't realize how leaky it would be, but I actually got some quite fantastic images on that. But over time, the mechanism to transport the film broke down, so it didn't hold up, didn't stand the test of time. But I learned a tremendous amount by doing that. And then something Becky said, which I kind of agree with, is that a lot of times it's, you know, what does this box look like? And does it speak to me? And does it say, oh, I can make a camera out of this? So after my attempt with that, I moved over to paper and I started making bigger cameras. And the first camera, which I initially called my UGG cam, it was made of a round cardboard box that these UGG earmuffs came in. It just had this beautiful curve to it. So I just thought, oh, it's a long focal length. It was 157 millimeters. And I just thought it would make like a really nice pano pinhole. And it worked out really well. I had never used paper before. I had to think practically, you know, so I was using whatever expired paper was available on, you know, eBay or people I knew who were selling things. And I figured, oh, it doesn't matter. I'll just shoot as much as I can with it, see what it looks like. Either it'll be good or it won't be. And then Becky gave me a recipe for Caffeinol, which I think is the Delta recipe. And
that's not the stand recipe. That CL is the stand. So Delta is a shorter.
Yeah, it's really fast. So that combination of paper and Caffeinol worked out well, because the paper was cheap and readily available when I started. Kodachrome 2 is what I initially would get, and I would specifically look for expired paper because it was cheap. And and it was a little quirky. You know, it has its artifacts because of age and you know, what have you. Mm-hmm. And the Caffeinol is so inexpensive and easy to make, and then easy to handle. So I would put my images in a tray, lightly agitate for about 2 minutes, water to stop, standard fix diluted for paper. And that's how I did it. It was so easy. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
You shared one of your, I don't know if it's the only one, on some of the stuff you've been sharing into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group over the last day or so. There's one from August the 3rd, 2015, with your UGG.
Yes.
Yeah. 9x4. So you had a strip of paper 9 inches by 4. So that's presumably the 4 inches was the height of the camera, I guess. And it just wrapped around
That's correct.
Around the inside.
Yeah.
And it's very simple, but very elegant. And of course, you just would struggle to capture anything quite like it. You've got this tree bang in the middle of the image with a pinhole pointing at it, and then you've got the land wrapping around it, and you've got the light coming in because the sun's probably just off to one side, and it just everything that I think a pinhole picture should be. You know, it's
with the two trees,
one tree.
Yeah, it's the first one. It's August 2nd, 2015. That was the very...
August the 3rd, actually. Oh, yeah, but anyway.
That was the very first picture I took with the camera. I went out, took it, went home, made some Cafenol, developed it. It's covered in dust, so you can see all the dust markings. And
that's okay.
I was so pleased that, okay, you know, there was no stopping me then.
That's not dust. That's pinhole glitter.
The trouble with cardboard pinhole cameras is they're great, aren't they? And it's a very simple material to use, of course, but robust wise, and you don't want to take it out in the rain. You know, they do tend to start falling apart after a while.
Right. This definitely could have broken down quite easily. I did glue a wooden base to it that made it more firm when it was locked into a tripod. And that gave it some really good stability. But yeah, if it got wet, it would definitely disintegrate. And I guess that's one of the advantages of using a really solid wooden box, is that it's more robust.
Yeah, so that leads you on to cigar boxes, and tell us about your cigar box pinhole camera. There was one particular one which I saw just recently, another wide one, and I've forgotten the name of it, but Padron Hermoso.
So that's a camera I just built recently as well. So that's a, let's see, I'm trying to remember, that is...
it's also 11 by 4. It's your favorite format, isn't it?
Well, my goal is to get as wide a wide I can make. And also it has to fit within the paper that I can get. So... I do have some 12x8 paper, and so I started out. I started out first with this flat pano pinhole, just to see. Okay, you know, with this short focal length, it's actually not that short. It's about 80 millimeters. It's probably a medium focal length, but just to see how the image would come out, and would I get a lot of drop off at the periphery, vignetting. And it wasn't too bad, but I think ultimately I might rebuild that with a curved back so I can use the full 12 inches. But that camera performed quite well. These cigar boxes, they're cheap and easily available. They're very sturdy in the way they're built, and you can just cut them up and make them do whatever you want.
I think it was it you who recommended to me to actually go in a smoke shop, in a cigar shop, and speak to the owner direct rather than trying to find one on eBay.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah. We have a shop in town, down in Princeton, and I don't smoke, but I'll go in there from time to time, and they hold on to these boxes, and if you make a donation to a charity, they'll give you some boxes. So that's what I tend to do.
Yeah. The local cigar place that we have, Will Tobacco House or whatever, when you walk in, they're like stacked waist high up along all the walls inside. You know what I mean? And it's just like pick them, find the one you want, and put a couple,
bucks in. Around here, it's all far too healthy in Warboys.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about these boxes is they're unconventional in size. You know, for what you think of as film, they're very well built. Some of them have very unique artwork on them, which I like, because then when you're walking around with this camera, it sometimes gets people's attention in a positive way, so they'll come over and talk to you. Not that I want that all the time, but
not now you don't.
Yeah,
but not with the social.
The only thing I've found that I don't like about the cigar boxes, though, is that they're either way too thin or way too, the focal length will be too long, or it'll be
really thin,
you know, super
Padron,
wide.
If you look at I'm looking at one Morris posted 18 hours ago, of a El Cortez Primo. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's a hotel in Vegas. Yeah.
Is it? That's great, isn't it? There's a poster in the back there with some people walking along. And there's something about paper negatives, isn't there? I don't know what it is. There's a very distinct sort of look and feel But you've got a little bit of darkening at the edge, but not so much, really.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting because I, when I build the camera, I'll take a ruler or a straight edge, and I'll draw, you know, I'll draw a straight line from the pinhole position to the edge, and I'm like, okay, can the light make it all the way to the periphery? And it should, but it's very interesting how the center is super bright where the focal length is shorter and the periphery is a little darker. You know, it just takes longer for that light to expose the paper, yeah. I guess.
If it was a lensed camera, you'd need one of those center spot neutral density filters, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you have a curved, or you have a curved plane. I like plane.
The... Right, right.
Or you have a curved plane. Mm-hmm. Yep. The I like this one shot you did of the, we were talking about it earlier with the lifeguard in the water.
Yep.
And you use your Diana, with the pinhole setting on paper.
That's right.
And you use Cafenol.
Almost everything except for my 120 film is Cafenol.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to give Cafenol a go.
I use it, but I haven't used the Delta recipe. I've used the stand, the CL recipe for film, not for paper. Right. But I might give it a go in paper with the Delta recipe because I remember Becky talking about that. This lifeguard picture, the lifeguard? Yeah, so this is one I'm looking at, Morris's.
With the three slides.
Says it's a Polaris 130 parabolic pinhole one.
Oh, let's see.
Is that a different one? Is that still the lifeguard guy? I mean, he's quite small, but he's very dominant.
No. Because I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that is not a lifeguard. That's a very crowded beach, and it's called Hanauma Bay in Hawaii, in Oahu. And that was just one person standing there fiddling with their snorkel gear, and everybody else was swimming and moving around, and that just by random chance that person came out.
You couldn't have asked for a better placement of a figure in a photograph if you'd have planned it. He's actually bang in the middle of an inverted triangle. So you've got the apex at the bottom, and then you've got him, and he's on the golden triangle. Well, he's on the third anyway, isn't he? Pretty much.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right?
Well, the more you do it, the luckier you become as well.
Yeah, chance favors.
You sure you didn't pay him to stand still there?
You know, it's a funny thing. When I take these images, I have no idea. I mean, I can preconceive the image in my mind. Okay, what do I think this will look like? But I never know what I'm going to get. And which is part of the, it's almost like a gambler, right? You're hoping for something great. and sometimes I think, oh, I know this image is going to be fantastic. And I process it and it looks awful. And other times I'm like, it's my last sheet of paper for the day. I'm just going to shoot it so I don't go home with it unexposed. And that might be the one that I love. So.
And then that's normally how it goes. That's the one that's normally the best. Yeah. The one where you just don't care.
So tell us about the Polaris parabolic pinhole. Just the name of it intrigues me.
Well, it's much simpler than it sounds, but it is a tin can that United, the airline, gave out to its Polaris customers. If you, which was not myself, I had a relative who flew international and was in the United Polaris lounge. So they tend to give out things with, like, you know, socks and earplugs and things that you might use on a long distance flight. And I just liked this tin can because it had this oval parabolic wing shape to it. And I just decided, well, I'm going to make a camera out of this. It's very narrow and very long, and it holds a large negative, which I think is, that's also probably like, I don't know, it might be like another 11x4. It's something like that. It holds a very large piece of film. And then the leading edge of the oval shape is where the pinhole is located. So it really stretches out the image everywhere along the sides, except for right in line with the pinhole itself. So this individual is standing right in line with the pinhole. And that's why it's kind of, you know, looks very normal. And then everything else is a little bit anamorphic because the can has that oval, you know, wing shape to it. So it's just a very narrow parabolic.
I think, can you post a picture of this? Because you're just blowing my mind with the description of it. I'm still not quite certain what you're talking
about.
I
will definitely. I'll put it in the comment section of this. In fact, I'll do that for almost all of these cameras, so you can see what they look like.
Oh, that would be excellent. Yeah, if you had the image and then showed a picture of the camera, so that folks can
definitely will do that.
If you're listening along, by the time you get to listen to this, I'm sure Morris would have beavered away and added cameras to a lot of these pictures.
I'm happy to do that because. When I built this, I had no idea what these pictures would look like. And I was really kind of quite shocked that, this degree of distortion, like I've never made any specifically anamorphic cameras, and people do, and they create these great images. I just haven't, figured it all out yet, but this one was, as close to that as I could get.
And you've got a Corrie Cannon pinhole camera as well. It's called the Cro-Magnon Knuckle Dragon.
The Cro-Magnon. That's my caveman camera. I love that camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The pinhole cannon model.
Yeah.
Yeah. One to me, I think that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. It's heavy. It's like a sledgehammer. But the beauty of that is it has a fitted Graflex 6-sheet film holder on it.
Oh yeah, what do they call those? They call them something, don't they? Graphmatic. Yeah.
So yeah, I just bought one of these. I just, when I go out, I'm sure it's like everybody. When I go out to take pictures, if I'm by myself, it's no problem. But if I'm traveling with family, they're not photographers and they're very tolerant. But I know there's a point where I'm going to, push my luck, right? Exactly.
Push your luck,
exactly.
Is what we call it.
So I had to think. Well, what's the most efficient way that I can take multiple images without, testing their patience? And so I bought one of these 6-sheet film holders, and I loaded them with paper, and it worked like a charm. So I was able to just carry this camera on a tripod with me, just set it down, take a picture, and just slide the film changer to put the next sheet of paper in. Otherwise, when I use these other cameras, I will literally change after every shot. I'll put the camera into a dark bag, pull out the paper, put in a new sheet, and it just takes time, which most of the time I have time. But when I'm with them, I have to really be, stealthy. So,
so when I'm taking a single shot camera out with me, and I think Corrie's the same, we tend to just accept that that's going to be the image. Mm-hmm. But you're using these single shot cameras, like a, one with a dark slide in almost, aren't you? With a film holder, because you're taking a dark bag, a changing bag with you.
I have, I have a very
and reloading in
correct,
the field.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I have a kit which I take everywhere, even on holiday, and it always has cut paper in it for whatever camera happens to be with me, so that I could reload on the street. If I need to, or back at the hotel if I have the film changer, just for efficiency's sake. But yeah, I mean, some people will go out and say, okay, I'm going to take a picture of this specific structure, and then they'll just go back home and that's it. That's the one picture they took. But I want to go out and shoot as much as I can.
But you're not making life easy for yourself, are you? Except with your Graphmatic.
Right.
If you're by yourself,
that's true enough. Yeah, that's true. Enough. So this Cro-Magnon, sorry, Morris, this Cro-Magnon, how do you pronounce it?
It's like a caveman, right?
Is that what it is? Is that what the word means?
Yeah, it's like
Does it?
Big forehead like yours, Andrew.
It's a word I've not come across, and there are very few.
Heavy eyebrows.
Look at
Neanderthal, right. Which I kind of like the symbolism of that, right? Because these cameras are very rudimentary and caveman-like. And one of the things I want to do is I want to take the simplest possible object and allow it to create something that's, I don't want to use the word extraordinary because that's a little hyperbolic, but I want to create the best image I can with the simplest possible object. So that's my goal, right? I don't want this camera to be, $2,000. I want it to be worth less than $5. and just go out there and take a good image with it. If I could fold an origami camera out of paper, I would do that. You know, just no, you can, but that's my, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's my goal, right? Like,
oh.
Can I take a piece of
right
what essentially is garbage and allow that to create something that's really nice?
That's what I liked about one of the things that drew me in about doing pinhole photography was, if you can't do it with that, you know, I mean,
yeah,
either it works or it doesn't. You have no, you know, you can't say, oh, well, my sensor is dirty or
battery,
you know,
died,
or blah, blah, blah. Or this, the chromatic abrasions from this lens is why it's not sharp. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, either you can do it or you can't.
I think it's
know?
The form first of photography, right? It's the most simplest form, using a rudimentary film and really rudimentary development, and you get what you get.
Yeah. If you can't do it with a pinhole camera, maybe you should get into a hobby like Andrew playing golf or something.
I don't play golf. So I've got a Diana F Plus, and I think I put one roll of film through it, and I hated it. And I was aware that it had a pinhole setting, but I've never, ever used it.
Why did you hate it?
I don't know, and I love toy cameras. I just didn't like it, not compared to my Holger. I was just so familiar and comfortable with the Holger. I found the Diana kind of clumsy to use, really. And yet, but it looks lovely. I've got that fancy flash on it, you know, and I've got it in a fancy little half case, you know, and it looks great, but I just don't use it.
Well,
so maybe pinhole with paper in is the way forward.
You can put 120. I've done, you know, pinhole on 120, but I wanted to experiment with that little piece of paper where it would really make the grain very chunky. And I just figured, well, let me try it. You know, I mean, one of the things I do, and I know people love their Holgas, and I have a variety of Holgas, which I just haven't had the opportunity to use yet because it's like Sophie's choice. Every time I go out, I have to choose what, you know, three or four or five cameras are going to fit. And that's what I'm taking with me. So the other ones have to stay home.
Right.
But, you know, I just happen to have the Diana, and that's what I started with. So I like it because I know how it's going to behave or perform. And the other thing I do, which I recommend, is I use the Pinhole Assist app on my phone, and I light meter. So I have a general idea of what my exposure should be, and that takes half of the uncertainty out of the equation.
Yeah. So you've did you vacation in Hawaii?
My brother and my brother lives there, and my parents have retired there. So I go out to visit them frequently as I can. Just, you know, and if you've never been to Hawaii, I recommend it. It's a very beautiful place. Several islands, and they're all unique. You know, endless opportunities for photography, but it's all nature. You know, if you like nature, that's what you'll see there.
Yeah.
Who lives there?
We have Mark lives there, and Mike. Aloha,
that's
Mike.
It.
We haven't had Mike on the show yet, but he's been on a few other.
He's a podcast tart, so we won't have him on here.
Yeah.
And,
Hawaii's great.
And of course,
hey Mark,
awesome photographer who photographed, and I've mentioned him several times now. His name's just gone out of my head. I think he's been in ill health of late, but maybe he's better now.
Oh,
you know who I mean, don't you?
What's his name? Ross.
Yeah, Ross Tigati. Yeah, Tigati. Yeah, and then he's got a different handle on Flickr, hasn't he? And he did all those kind of surreal pictures of things he found on the beach, close up. Yeah.
Beach.
Ross Tigati or something.
Yep.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Folks listening, if you go to the Lenses Podcast Facebook group and type in Morris's name, look at this picture. It's Maurice. It's not Maurice. Maurice.
They're going to find
Maurice just sounds wrong. trust me. So there's this picture that Maurice took with his Diana Plus F Plus with a pinhole in there, and it's an architectural shot, but it's one with lots of side lighting and columns, and you've got the perspective tram lines going into the distance. And don't know where it is, but it's just so good, really. So good.
Thank you. Thank you. That's at Princeton University. That's one of their libraries, which is a stunning structure. So I couldn't resist.
With just a steeple, like in the at sunset.
No, it's a series of columns. It's
a series of columns with shadows going raking across the bottom, Corey, from the columns.
Yeah, it's from August 20th.
Oh, and then you've got... There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Well, if it inspires folks to get their toy cameras out, like me, and play with a pinhole,
break them out and go.
Yeah, because I've got a couple of holders set aside for. Converting into pinhole, but if I've got the Diana, then it's ready to go, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very predictable. It works well.
Yeah.
So, what is it that you like? I know a lot of people love their Holgas. What do you like about the Holga?
It's the one camera. If you go to my Flickr feed, there's probably more pictures posted with it than any others. So that tells you a lot about which is probably my favorite medium format. Camera, and I like in particular portraits with it. That's what really gets me. But I like, and I suppose because I've got to know it, I took it away with me the first time to New York in 2012, did a lot of street photography with it, and I seem to very quickly be able to guess distances and get bitingly sharp images. And I've, you know, this the main Holger I use has a very nice sharp spot. You know, in the middle. Another one I've got has a sharp spot slightly off to the side, which is a bit weird. And they all produce, the two or three I've got all produce slightly different swirly effects around the edges, you know.
Right.
And it's just, anything that's just it's what draws me to pinhole, like you, I guess. Anything that isn't clinical, anything that's just a bit different, that's harder to replicate with sort of digital technology. Right. And the simplicity of
it, really.
I've been shooting the 645 mask in mine lately. I haven't even been shooting it square.
I don't even know where my 645 mask is. I must have it somewhere in a drawer.
Yeah, I've been using that because, I mean, then you get like, I don't know, what, 16 shots a roll?
Have you?
Mm-hmm. The Holger for me is just, I don't know. It's kind of, I don't have to worry about anything. When you see a picture you want to take, you can just kind of go for the distance and then you know, that's it, you know, no shutter speed or anything, you know. Just I like the ease of use, and I actually got to where I've I almost keep my Holga on the focusing scale. I took a piece of tape and I set it just past the three person setting, and I leave it there because the depth of field will cover you from 3 feet. Farther away. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, a lot of those.
You can move it to infinity, of course, and you can move it to the first person because it's going to bring your depth of field closer to the lens. But in general, I mean, you can kind of keep it there, and everything I've shot with it has been, you know, been
it'll
focused,
be. So. That's not a bad tip, really, because a lot of those older zone focus cameras had, or folding cameras which were zone focus. They would often have a red dot, wouldn't they, on next to one of the f-stops. And if you read the manual, the little red dot is for all-round photography, so it gives you the best balance between exposure and depth of field. And basically, you set it to that, and
That's probably close to like the hyperfocal probably distance is, in the lens of the probably depth of field at f8 or whatever.
And so you reckon from your experience that if you set it to the three dude setting, which is 2 meters, isn't it? 2 meters.
You're single, you meet someone, you have a family, then you go to the mountain and die. That's how the scale goes.
Yeah, I've seen that red dot. I never knew what that was for. But see, always learning.
I love my Holga. I'm holding it now. I've got the one with the. I am.
Don't be fine on it right now.
I've taken the batteries out because I love the ones with the flash on.
Your Holga has
yeah,
batteries.
Yeah, I've got the FN,
flash,
so I've
you?
Taken the battery out, yeah. Because I haven't been shooting it for a while, and I don't want them to leak everywhere. But I have used the flash. I use the flash creatively where I can, and I think it's useful to have to a bit of a burst of flash, you know, on a longer
exposure.
For your
portraits, did you use flash or no?
Yeah.
Generally, no. No, most of them are street portraits of folks I just go up to, you know. And I'm starting to...
But the fall-off on it is so fat. The fall-off on it is so bad. I mean, is it even really...
You want, mate? Sorry?
I don't have the flash one, so I haven't really used it, but I don't... I'm past 2 or 3
oh,
feet.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I've used it... I've used it on shots where I've just had one burst in amongst some movement, and it just adds a little bit of freezes it a little bit, you know. I don't use it a lot, cool. but... It's just, I suppose it was the first Holger I bought off the Ilford stand. They were flogging them at the photography show years ago, and I bought one there. And that's when I bought them subsequently. I've always bought the same model because I guess because it was familiar.
One of the interesting things about the Diana is the lens, that plastic lens, it just diffuses the light a certain way. You know, if you're lucky, you catch it a certain way. So it's a very creamy looking diffusion of the light, and it's really very lovely. And it's one of the things that I like the most. You know, obviously you wouldn't see that on the pinhole setting, but on the non-pinhole settings, it just has such a lovely look to it. And I would assume you get something similar to that in a Holga, but it's probably very unique. One of the Holgas is sold with a glass lens. Have you ever used one of those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I have. I actually the glass lens I have on one of the Holgas that I'm shooting with now has been on two other cameras, and the shutters have died. And then so I just go from the inside, take the screws out, and just take that lens off and put it on another camera. So yeah. I'm just saying, use the same lens. I you know, I mean, some people say, oh, it's glass, it's not this, but I mean, it's still single element, you know. I just like the way that lens does it, you know. So I just use it instead of getting another one and having to figure it out. But even taking it off and putting it on another camera, you're changing it a little bit, you know, like, you know, so it's different, but it's same.
It's
so,
still a single element meniscus lens. So, I mean, it's not, you're not talking some massively well over-designed lens, are you?
Right.
Yeah. But it has a little bit different characteristic and how it handles focus than the plastic one does. Some people say it doesn't, but the test I've done with mine is it's a little bit different. Not necessarily better or worse, just different. And I like that one. And so it's so easy to just take it off and change it. Take it off and change it. You know?
Your architectural pinhole, I'm just scrolling further down now and, there's one here, cityscapes with two skyscrapers in the background. Actually, it looks like the Twin Towers, but it can't.
Yeah. That's another one of the Cro-Magnon. These are cigars. And so I bought a variety of the boxes because I like the size format. So this one is...
So it's 5x7. Is that roughly the sort of footprint of the
correct.
Camera?
So that's the
7x5, you mean?
Well, he's written.
I subscribe to the 5x7, which I think is a lovely format. This has a short focal length; it's only 52 millimeters. And what I learned from that, you know, I didn't know this before, was that when I took images, it was going to really stretch out, you know, the not the depth of field, but like the objects feel like they're much farther away than what they look like. Plus, this is a very wide-angle camera because of the short focal length and the large image size. So you can see it captures everything from the ceiling to the windowsill all the way down to the street and the sky. This is just shot right out of a window in Manhattan. And so I was pleasantly surprised with that aspect of the effect. I think like most wide-angle cameras, they, if they're used in the right setting, you'll get a really good result. But, you know.
I think I could get something similar to that on my 045. I don't use that enough, but I know that's got an insanely wide.
If you don't use any of the extensions, if you just use the body.
I'm always worried that I'm going to get the tripod. Well, I should maybe use it without the tripod. I think the tripod feet get in the way.
Sometimes you will pick those up.
Is that wide?
This is great because you can see things on the windowsill, can't you?
Yeah.
You've got everything sharp, not sharp, from the you're looking at what's on the windowsill. You can see the cars down below, and it reminds me of who was the Russian guy who shot from up above? Rodchenko was his name. Is that the guy? I think it was Rodchenko. Rodchenko. And he shot. And this has got a very sort of 1930s feel about it. If it wasn't for those sort of more modern skyscrapers in the back, it's just got a very timeless feel about it. And I think that's excellent. I think it lends itself to architecture. Then you've got Times Square a little bit further down, which is, again, a different pinhole camera, longer focal length. So you're getting a more natural perspective with this one. This is 113mm pinhole. That's all you say. What sort of camera is that?
No, that's another cigar box. And that was an iteration that, you know, before I got to the film changer, I used a one of these Graflock. No, let's see, what is it called? This was I have to look at the name of it. This is a graphic film pack adapter. So in my efforts to make film changing easier in the street, you know, these film packs aren't really available anymore for the Graflex cameras. So these film pack adapter cases were easy to buy on eBay. So I bought six of them. And what I did was I cut some foam core blocks to just fill the inside of that that container, and that held my cut paper flush to the inner frame of that film pack adapter. It also prevented any light leaking. So these fit perfectly into a cigar box that I had purchased, and it was light tight. I could just hold them in with rubber bands, and I could keep six of these loaded in my bag. And so I just went out on the street, shot them, not even a shutter on the camera. I just hold my finger over the pinhole while I slid out the slide. Yeah, then I would expose it, put my finger back over the pinhole, and then close it up. And I could just take a break, go into a cafe, reload my film holders. And so that was just one step in the evolution, you know.
Do you know what this makes me want to do? I don't know about how you feel about it. I mean, you haven't got as many cameras as I have, Corey. I mean, I've tried to get rid of gear over the years, but I've got so much stuff, you know. It makes me want to get rid of all of it and buy just have a couple of homemade pinhole cameras. And then my mind will be clear and focused, you know. I've got fewer choices. Mind you, you still got a dozen pinhole cameras, so you're in just the same boat, really, aren't you, Morris? It's just that yours are all pinhole cameras, whereas I've got, should it be large format? Should I take my half frame camera? Should I take my Nikon? This, that, or the other pinhole? And then my head explodes.
That's exactly what I feel like every time I step out the door. Yes.
poor Julie.
And then you've got, so that 113mm camera, a couple further down, there's another brilliant street shot with some, I guess it must be in Europe somewhere, because there's tram cobbled streets and tram lines going around the corner. There's obviously a tram has gone past, because you can just see the ghosting of it.
That's in Prague.
And then that's Prague. If I was going to guess, I would say Prague. Prague's just a brilliant place.
That's the opera house. I wish I could just spend a week there doing nothing but pinhole. It's quite lovely.
That's the 113mm pinhole. What is that? That's a cigar box?
That's also a cigar box. So. Yeah, and that's the one where I fitted film pack adapter to hold film. So.
See, for me, that style of shot that shows motion are the shots that I like the most. Some form of time scale, like the guy in the pool, you know, with the water moving. That's just, you know, people walking around. Some people will do those shots and do such a long exposure that everything disappears. It just looks like a normal scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But everybody has what they like, you know. Not there's anything wrong with either approach, you know, but I like seeing.
Well, a lot of times with my digital cameras, you know, I would kind of get upset where I'd be taking a picture of something that I thought was really, you know, nice, and then there would be somebody just standing right in the middle of the image, and you know, that's fine, but it's not what I wanted. And with pinhole, because the exposures are longer, if the individuals end up in the image, a lot of times they have a kind of like a painterly appearance to them. They almost look like silhouettes or,
right.
And I don't find it offensive at all. It's just, a lot of times it adds to the quality.
Well, it's, you know, you can look at it in lots of different ways, as Corey said, and the fact that you're recording a chunk of time in a single frame, then the fact that you're getting hints of what was passing by. And I think this one in Prague is perfect because there's clearly been things going past the camera, but you can't. And then your mind starts to think, well, what is it? And then you look at the tram line and you think, well, actually, it's probably a tram.
Yeah, exactly right.
And it looks like it's actually gone round the corner. So, you know, and there's just ghost traces of it, isn't there? And,
and at one point during that shot, the light turned red and there was a car sitting there. So I just put my finger over the pinhole and I waited for the car to leave. Yeah, I just paused it. Yeah,
just paused it. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You can
pause. Pinhole pause is your finger.
Yeah.
The pause button. The only little bit of color you have is this with the CineSteel film. That's Andre Dominguez and those guys. Have you shot a lot of that CineSteel film?
My son gave me as a gift. He gave me four rolls of it. And I just experimented with it. Cool. And I'm not a huge fan of it yet, but that's because I haven't really. I'm not sure if it's well suited for pinhole. Maybe it's better for just straight up toy camera or.
It's crazy saturation that it gets a lot of saturation. I've been wanting to test some too. I'm still waiting for Andre to send me.
I'm staring at a couple of staring rolls. I'm staring at a
test.
I'm staring at a roll here that I shot in my. What was it? It could have been the Terrapin. I think it was my Terrapin camera. I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done. It's next to my computer, so I can scan. These are all night shots, or inside a restaurant. And I can't tell what they're going to come out like. There's a lot of shots with a load of squiggly lines all over them.
Yeah.
But yeah, CineSteel 800T. I've shot it in a pinhole camera.
That's correct.
That's tungsten
The 800T. So I've got a few rolls of that I bought from Analog Wonderland. Shout out to them last year, and I really bought it to put in my RB67 to do some of these very popular sort of gas station shots or shots of buildings lit up, you know. But I haven't really got around to that mainly because it's been too cold.
And that's part of the reason why I wanted it, because I've seen some very beautiful, you know, night shots like that. But I haven't gotten that result yet.
I'm just reading the book, a book by. Well, I thought his name was pronounced Ed Rusker, but when you read it, it's actually pronounced Ed Ruscher, I think. And he was a guy who did the book all on the gasoline stations, you know, and then every building along Sunset Boulevard, and he did one called Nine Swimming Pools and Four Girlfriends. And so he was a conceptual artist, really. I don't know if he's still alive. He might be conceptual artist, really, but he really kicked off that photographing gas station type things, you know, and he did some at night time as well. And, you know, it's, there's nothing new, is there, really? Well, it probably was new then, but it's not now.
Right.
But yeah, I'm going to scan these CineSteel shots and see what all the fuss was about.
I look forward to seeing them because my results were not great, but you know, I don't think I shot them.
Well, I'm not looking at these negative. I'm not sure these are great either.
There's no doubt in my mind that.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something weird going on in here. I think this was a Thai restaurant in December. I'm just staring at one of these negatives, and it's like someone's waving a torch in front. I don't know what's going on. There must have been some weird light movements. Anyway, that's CineSteel 800T. I'm not sure I'd be buying it to put in my pinhole camera, really.
Do they have a... I'm not sure. I'm sure they probably do, but... They have the 800T, but do they have anything slower?
50D.
They don't have anything slower.
Yeah, they do.
50, okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's 50. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a 50 daylight. Is there...
daylight balance.
Is there more than that? I can't remember now.
I thought there were two. There were two speeds, so that's probably it.
There's certainly a 50 daylight. Yeah. Well, you could buy the...
Cool.
You could buy the Kodak Vision stock, can't you, and fiddle with the Remjet. Get rid of that if you want to.
Ugh. That doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, I feel like I was born at the wrong time, or I came to photography at the wrong time, because, you know, as much as I use paper, I do love film, and usually I'll find something just as it's been discontinued, like Fuji Acros is one of my favorite black and whites. You know, I still like Kodak T-Max and the Ilford HP5, but Fuji Acros, I really love the quality of that, and I'm using up my stock of it, but I haven't...
Well, you can buy the new stuff. It's just a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, and I haven't tried that.
A little bit more? Tried
twice.
More than double, because it's like $11.
Yeah, it's about twice. So I can get...
You used to be able to get that 5-pack for $23.
Yeah.
I discovered it. I bought a 5-pack in 2017 to shoot in when I went to Atlanta, and I shot some in the cemetery in just on the outskirts of Atlanta. One of these sort of gothic-y cemeteries where a few famous folks are buried. I can't remember who they were now. And it was my only few rolls of the Fuji Acros. And then they discontinued it shortly after. So I was liking what I was getting, and it was, of course, easy because you didn't have to worry about
it. I haven't even... I've completely moved on past it. I don't even have any more in stock anymore. Got rid of all of it.
I have a couple of rolls of the new stuff Ilford. Just to try it out, but I don't think I'll be.
I like Ilford now. I've been shooting Ilford. That's kind of like my HP5 and the ortho stuff.
HP5 was my go-to pinhole, and probably still is, really. It's my go-to film stock for most things.
It's got a great contrast. Yeah. That's what I love about the HP5.
I was shooting some yesterday. I managed to get out and avoid people in the coronavirus pandemic. In a Coronet box camera, Coronet Ambassador, which I picked up for £4, and it had a sticky shutter, so I took it apart and stuck the shutter mechanism in some IPA, you know, not the stuff you drink, isopropyl alcohol. And this is 6x9. It takes so 8 shots on a 120 roll. Of course, it's not Kodak, so it's 120.
Do you have to respool
the
rolls?
No, it takes 120. Mm-hmm. And it's got two little levers. One of them you pull out and it puts a green filter. Get that? A green filter over the lens. And the other one you pull out and it puts a time function on. There's no tripod socket. That's the only thing. So this has got a really slow shutter speed. I don't know if you can hear that. Hang on. I reckon it's about 30th of a second. So I stuck some HP5 in there. It was quite a sunny day, so I pulled the green filter out, and I read somewhere that it introduces two stops. But I reckon I'm going to be good to go with HP5.
They probably put that green filter in there so that whenever you would – to help compensate for over or underexposed, I guess. Because if you use a green filter, that makes greens brighter. So if you took a shot outside that was underexposed and you're cutting the green, the green's going
to
look brighter.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be the color of the filter will lighten that color in nature.
Okay.
So it's making the negative denser where the green areas are.
Mm-hmm.
So it lets those areas of green will see more light hitting the film because it's being preferentially pushed through the green spectrum of the filter. The negative becomes denser, and so when you print it or scan it, it becomes lighter. That's it.
Yep.
So it's got that. And this camera is, and I'm getting right into box cameras at the moment.
How old is it?
Well, it's made in England. 50-something. So it's a Coronet Ambassador made in England. This camera is mint condition. I mean, it's beautiful. Apart from the stucker. The shutter was stuck. The other one I picked up is the English made Kodak Brownie Flash 3 made in England. Now this is like the Kodak 620 Model D, but it's the one that came after and it was made in England. And this is also in pretty much spotless condition. This has a tripod socket. It has an attachment for the bespoke flash. It has a cable release. It has a neat little tab you pull out, and it says 5 feet to 10 feet when you pull it out. When you push it in over 10 feet, and then and then it has a yellow filter that you pull out. So that's a Kodak Brownie Flash 3, and I haven't shot with that yet. But what I did do, and you might have seen those pictures, Corey. Did you see those portraits? Did I speak about this? The portraits I shot with the flipped lens on the on those. So and that's flashy. Very Holger-ish as well for me, anyway. You know, that sort of I'm getting a very close up portrait. With all the swirly shit around the edges. So box cameras, I'm really, and if you don't want to spend thousands of pounds on a Holger, you can spend a few,
You know,
you can spend a few dollars on one of these.
For your coronet, the fact that it doesn't have a tripod socket, one of the things I've done with older cameras is I've cut up a cigar box, put a standard T-nut, you know, adapter on it that will hold the tripod screw, and you can fit it to hold that camera and just put rubber bands to hold it in place. And it gives you the advantage of that like tripod feature without actually having a screw in the bottom of the camera.
The other thing you could do is get one of the quick release tripod plates, which I've got many of for different systems, and just take the screw bit out, and then with some double sided tape, or if you wanted to super glue it, you could actually glue it to the bottom, and then you have that. But yeah, I was just hand holding this yesterday, taking some pictures along the river, and these things are just beautiful, and I was amazed at how I've got these both off Facebook Marketplace, so they're like local sellers, and the Coronet. No, the Brownie Flash was, I went and picked it up off a guy who owned a restaurant. He'd closed the restaurant and he said it was one of his kind of display items that he had just on a shelf, you know. And honestly, if you went out and bought this in a shop today, you would think it was brand new. Both these cameras.
They make great straw dispensers.
Yep. Brownie, so I'd thoroughly recommend the Brownie Flash. The Brownie Flash 3 with built-in filter. And also the beautiful Coronet Ambassador, both made in England. The Ambassador takes 120 film, and the Brownie Flash is 620. Although I'm not sure whether I can squeeze in a 120 reel yet. I've not tried. Otherwise, I may have to re-spool stuff.
There's a real beauty to these old cameras that if you open them up and you look at, you know, if you take them apart, you can see there are notes in there from whoever built the camera. And if you know this camera's from, you know, 1920 or something, it's a real interesting walk back in time. And mechanically, they're just very elegantly made, simple. But yeah, I love the fact that you can take one of these out and still use it.
It definitely was simple but effective.
It was
engineering with them, you know.
An old Kodak stock. Yep. From I guess the 50s, and I bought it on Facebook Marketplace, and I messaged the guy who sold it to me. He says, I don't know, it was my grandfather's, don't know. So I developed it using that method that you suggested, Corey, using C41 stand at room temperature, and I got some images of some, like you do in all fan film, of two old grannies standing in front of a building. If you find fan film in a camera, you tell that there'll always be a granny or two standing with a handbag and white gloves, standing in front of a building.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's glasses, so I, the pointy edge. The
horn-rimmed glasses.
I tried correcting all the crazy color shifts, and goodness knows what I'd gone on, but I did my best and sent these images to the man who sold me the camera. And he was very very grateful. Well, unless he was just being polite, I don't know. Who is this lunatic? Well,
we hated her.
He didn't know. He didn't know who they were. He said he was, he said he was going to go and ask some of his relatives if they knew who this person was, and please not to bother him again. So there's quite a story with these old cameras, and of course it fits right in with the world of Pinhole, because these things are just you know, they aren't digital cameras, are they? And they haven't got, they've got single lenses, mostly, I think. And they're cheap and fun and, yeah, brilliant stuff. And I love it.
Mm.
So you can get gas, can't you?
Cool.
But without, what?
Yep.
You can get gas with this, but it's not costing you the earth, really.
You can eat with anything.
Yep. Because both of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Or watches.
Some people get gas over pens, over ink pens. You know,
mainly men, like, though, have you noticed?
Yep. Watches. Yep.
It is mainly men. All right. Men are obsessed with things.
I don't know. That's not true, because my wife is into doing the designing the planners, and she has boxes and boxes of washi tape and sticker books, and she does all kinds of stuff. So, you know, everybody has their own Shangri-La.
It's the hunter-gatherer.
You shared this. Sorry, I know, Corey. I can sense Corey is wanting to wind the show up, but look, you shared something in the Facebook. You shared this in the Facebook group a few days ago. This, and I've seen someone else shared it as well. Moonlight etchings of the forgotten artist who taught Edward Hopper. Talking about the sinister pictures of, you know, shops and gas stations and things with people in them. That they all of them kind of hark back to those Edward Hopper paintings, don't they? So, and there's this Hopper. What did I say?
Indeed.
Edward Hopper. So there's Hopper. This article you've shared, and moonlight etchings of the guy who taught Edward Hopper, and they're just beautiful, aren't they?
Yep.
And, it makes you want to get out there with your camera and do some nighttime photography. Yeah, well, that's one of the things you can do. You can get out
socially after dark. Distance yourself.
Maybe not with your pinhole camera, because you're going to be there like all night, aren't you? You'll have to take your sleeping bag with you.
I just got sleeping on the ground. Get out of here! You just ruined my shot.
I'd recommend that article if you can find that. You can certainly, if you go to the Facebook group and stalk. You can stalk Maurice and find that post he put.
Give it a read.
Yep, it's up there.
Yep. Well,
I told you he was trying to wind the show up.
Know where they can track you down if they want to see you. Or...
Well, the easiest place to find me is on Facebook or Instagram under my name, Maurice Fitzpatrick. So that's where I post everything.
There you go. That's pretty easy. And you are on the Facebook group, so if you don't have Instagram and you want to talk, you can
we've tasked Maurice with going away and adding pictures of each camera that he's shot. He's been busy boy posting all these pictures into the group.
Right.
But now the homework is to go away and show the camera as well. Mm-hmm. So we can indeed. All spend our days of slowly going mad building cameras. It's got to be better than, I'll tell you what, it's got to be better than giving in to the fear and the madness and the sheer nonsense that's going on over here, I tell you. So folks, don't give in to the fear.
It's over here too, don't worry.
And don't, if you're in America, don't go and buy a gun, okay?
Nope. Please don't. Indeed.
Yeah.
Just wash your
hands. Stay safe, everybody.
You as well. Right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Corey.
Yep.
Bye.
Stay safe, and we'll talk to you guys
soon.
Thank
you. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I was just very well. Yeah, nice to speak to you. I was just telling Corey about all the pictures you're posting on the Facebook group, and it's probably the best place to look at them.
We're already a step ahead of you, Andrew. We've already sorted that out.
Oh, I tell you, the one that I love, it's just so good, isn't it? Is paper.